We have lots of Titans free agency updates. The Titans have signed defensive tackle Sebastian Joseph Day. We're going to react to that. And a handful of guys the Titans missed out on who signed elsewhere in free agency. We're going to break all of that down now. This is the Music City Audible. Let's get to it. Welcome everyone to another episode of the Music City Audible podcast presented by Broadway Sports Media in partnership with 440 Sports. I'm Justin Graver. With me as always is Justin Mello. And today, as I mentioned off the top, we got a lot of news to go through for the Titans. Particularly interesting is the report that they have signed defensive tackle Sebastian Joseph Day. What does that mean for the defense and the needs there? Reminder, this episode is brought to you by Sinker's Beverages in East Nashville and Bluegrass Beverages in Hendersonville. Justin, how is it going today?
Doing well. I miss you. It's been a couple days. I got used to seeing you every single day. I think sometimes multiple times a day. The Titans were really active in free agency, and we took a couple days off because they took a couple days off, it seems. Yeah. And but we're back. We've got a we were doing an episode today anyway, was our plan. It's been about 4 or 5 days. And but our vision lined up with the Titans' vision because they've made a signing. After a few days off, as I said, Sebastian Joseph Day, defensive tackle, a position of clear need on the team. So excited to get into that with you.
Yeah, there's been no numbers reported yet, although you had it on a source that it was a low-value contract, one-year deal. Is that the situation?
I'll just say that I've got reason to believe it's not a ton. And I'm sort of, you know, I mean, you could probably guess that based on the quality of player, but the source that I spoke with I didn't make it sound like it was going to be a high value contract. That's all I can say.
Well, that's good for the Titans because they need players there. I mean, they could spend money. For example, they could have gone out and signed DJ Reader to the deal that he signed with the Lions. 2-year, $27.25 million contract, $9 million guaranteed with a first year cap hit of only $5.3 million. But
Good deal.
It's a great deal for the Lions, but I think we need to be careful talking about this kind of thing in the sense of like, oh, the Titans should have just signed that guy. By all accounts, it seemed like DJ Reader was heading to Detroit regardless of what other offers came in. I mean, he had a visit lined up with them almost immediately. He reportedly wanted to play there for a playoff contender. Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Good team.
A team that's really good.
Contract. On the East Coast, not far from Cincinnati, right? Probably where he was or has a place. And we talked about him and Terrell Williams probably getting along well. And I when we say this about the Titans, you're right. I'm sorry I chimed in, but it's like, you're right, because 28 other teams probably should have signed DJ Reader, right? 25 teams. Like the Buffalo Bills, I'm on my timeline right now. I see a bunch of Bills guys that I follow saying, what the hell are they going to do with defensive tackle? They could have really used DJ Reader, right? So,
yeah, and we were wondering what the hell are the Titans going to do at defensive tackle before they signed Sebastian Joseph Day, which honestly, when we look at the needs remaining on this defense, and we're going to have another episode coming out here on YouTube talking about the remaining needs for this team, but I'll just say right now, the linebacker position has a gaping hole next to Kenneth Murray, who himself might be a gaping hole. We'll see how he fits in and how the Titans are able to get the most out of him. There's a gaping hole next to Amani Hooker in the secondary in the safety spot. And there's a gaping hole across the field from Chidobe Awuzie. If you assume Roger McCreary is in the slot, they need a third corner. They need another outside starting caliber cornerback. So there are huge holes on the defense.
Opposite Harold Landry,
edge,
in my
I
opinion.
Would say edge is a need, but it's not a gaping hole. It's not a glaring missing piece. Like Arden Key, not best suited to be an every down player who has to play against the run on early downs and then also rush the passer. Like he's better in a situational pass rusher role. But the Titans don't necessarily need someone there that is starting caliber. Like they have Arden Key. They have Rashad Weaver, who is a rotational backup type of guy. But at least they have bodies. At linebacker, I mean, we're talking about UDFAs, Otis Reese, and Jack Gibbons competing for a spot. At safety, who I don't even know who we're talking about competing for a spot.
Elijah Molden.
Elijah Molden, right? I guess. At the
Davon Wallace and Terrell Edmonds are no longer under contract.
Exactly. And at outside cornerback, it's like, what, Trey Avery is going to be slotted in to start right now if the season started today?
McCreary, I don't think they will, but if we're talking right now, it's like McCreary there and either, I guess Molden can't play the nickel because he's already at safety. Eric Garrard, right? The other nickel they played a lot last year. So either way, whether it's Eric Garrard or Trey Avery in the lineup as a top three, because you play three nowadays, not good. right? Yeah. Not a good situation.
So obviously there's these big holes on defense, and defensive tackle next to Jeffrey Simmons was one of them. And now that situation is more or less solved. And regardless of what you think of Sebastian Joseph Day, he's an above average starter in the league, I think. And especially playing next to Jeffrey Simmons, you're going to get the most out of him as opposed to making him the anchor of your defensive front, you know, make him a supporting piece to Simmons. And I think you can get the most out of him. He had a career best season last year in terms of sack numbers with 3 sacks, 11 quarterback hits. Not, those aren't great numbers, but for an interior guy who's more of a 2-down run stuffer than a 3-down pass rusher, I think, you know, you can get by with this for a season as sort of a band-aid on that defensive tackle position.
I keep seeing everyone say, oh, career best season. Why'd they cut him in December? Got a question that no one has the answer to. I'm not as crazy about the signing as you are. I don't think I'm going to be
honest.
Don't
get me wrong, I'm not crazy about the signing. I just think he's an above average player who
I'm not willing to go there
snaps.
Though is what I'm saying. I'm not even willing to go there. I mean, I'll say this. He's better than what they had.
Exactly.
I think no doubt about it, he's better than what they had. They had nothing, right? They had Keandre Coburn, who was, you know, got cut as a rookie. Not a great sign when you were I liked him coming out of Texas, wasn't it? The Hook'em guy. He was Texas guy, right?
Yeah.
I liked him coming out, but, you know, getting cut as a 6th or 7th rounder as a rookie, not great. Quentin Bohanna, like who else was even on the roster at that spot? Essentially nothing. So I like him better than what they had because they virtually had nothing, but I don't think that guarantees they're going to be good or that he's going to be good. I mean, there are a couple things that concern me. Number one, again, he just got cut in December, right? That's missed me with all this career year stuff. he got cut in December. Good with the Rams. Coming out, 6th-round pick, playing next to Aaron Donald. I think that helped him a lot. Good with the Rams. Parlayed that, you know, 4 years of production into a good contract with the Chargers. 3 years, $24 million. When they signed him, the Chargers had one of the worst run defenses in the league. They allowed 138 rushing yards per game. They signed him to try to stop the bleeding. They got worse in that department, right? It went from they averaged 138, then they allowed 145 in the first year that he was there. They also had a linebacker playing behind him, couldn't stop the run, Kenneth Murray Jr. So the two of them together in that front seven did not do a great job stopping the run.
Well, I would like to comment on that, though, if you don't mind, because you talk about, you know, what defense they played in, and there was a lot made about Brandon Staley's defense in
different.
LA. And one of the like staple philosophies of Brandon Staley's defense when he was with the when he was with the Rams for a year, having incredible success as a defensive coordinator, and then with the Chargers for a year, for multiple years as their head coach, still running the defense, is that he was okay giving up the run. We'll give up 3, 4, 5 yards a carry. We're going to stop the explosive plays. We're going to force you to drive, you know, 13, 15 plays down the field, picking up little bits and pieces here and there, and then force you to convert on third down multiple times. Like, that was the philosophy of the defense. Now, it didn't really work. Because
no.
They gave up way more than 3, 4, 5 yard chunks on the ground. They gave up 10, 12, 25 yard chunks in run defense. And a lot has also been made about like how complex his scheme was. And maybe it was a little too complex for a guy like Kenneth Murray, who just needs to be able to shoot the gap and run downhill and use his athleticism and not have to sit there on the field and think so much and read so many keys. So I think it's tough to say that you know, the run defense was bad in LA because Sebastian Joseph Day was signed as a defensive tackle and it got worse with him there. I don't think you're saying that, but I just want to make sure
right. We
don't give that impression that like this defense,
always plenty of blame to go around.
It was literally designed to give up the run, and they, you know, relied on guys like Sebastian Joseph Day to sort of stop that and let the linebackers be free flowing. And maybe he wasn't necessarily great at that, but also like you mentioned who he was playing next to in LA, not great talent. When he was playing next to Aaron Donald and the Rams, those were his best seasons, according to Pro Football Focus grades. I mean, his best season, according to PFF.
To like the contract he landed, right? Based on with
them. So his best grade, his best season with, according to PFF grades, was 80.6 grade in 2020. That's near elite. I mean, that's high quality. Every other year of his career has been low 60s. 2022 actually was low 50s. So he has been, you know, average to below average in a lot of seasons.
First year in LA didn't go well.
And so he was cut by the Chargers, like you said, in December after week 15, quickly picked up, though, by San Francisco and was with them for the regular season, that last 2 weeks of the regular season and their playoff run. So he was a contributor on a team that went to the Super Bowl. I mean, it's not like he was a total nobody washed guy, almost like when the Eagles signed Linval Joseph and Ndamukong Suh that one season that they went to the Super Bowl.
Did he play? Because I don't know. Like, how much did he play? You got snaps in front of you?
He did play. His first week of being in San Francisco, obviously, first week of the new team, he only played 11 snaps. His second week, though, he played 33 snaps, pretty split, 18 against the run, 15 against the pass, and he graded out that week with a 72.4 grade for PFF, which is good starter quality grade. And then in the postseason with the Niners, he played sparingly throughout. He played 10 snaps in the wild card game or the divisional game, 5 snaps in the conference championship, and only 4 snaps in the Super Bowl. Didn't grade out particularly well. Totaled 3 tackles in the 3 playoff games.
I don't care what he graded on 4 or 5 snaps, right? It's like, but that, I think that paints a more accurate picture, right? Because towards the end of the regular season there, they're probably rotating a bit more than they were previously.
And San Francisco is a deep, deep group of defensive linemen. Yes. Now, a lot of those guys are gone in free agency, but the way we think about San Francisco last season, a very deep line. So, look, whether or not you think this guy, I mean, they didn't sign DJ Reader, right? They didn't sign the elite crop of nose tackle type of guys. But what Sebastian Joseph Day can do is he can play nose. He can play, you know, 2-eye, 2-tech, 3-tech, 4-tech, 5-tech. He can play all across the defensive line on the interior. You're not going to stick him at edge. He's not as versatile as Denico Autry. But he can eat up space in the middle of the defense, and he can move out side to side. Gives you flexibility with how you align your defensive fronts. You know, depending on the run scheme you're facing, the team you're facing, if you're expecting more pass, if you're expecting more run, you can move him around a bit. And he can succeed doing that. So I think it's a quality signing. And like you said, we don't know the money yet, but based on your sourcing, the money's going to be low. Look, they just needed a body there who isn't terrible, you know, who isn't somebody that's a UDFA that you're just throwing out there to the wolves next to Simmons. At least they have a guy who has a lot of starting experience and has played a lot of quality football in his career.
Couple of things before we move on. I spoke to another source with the Chargers that told me that, and this isn't shocking, right? They didn't get along, right? That there was issues. They questioned effort at times. Apparently there was a rumor, you know, they felt there was a sense of entitlement on his end. But again, I mean, they obviously things didn't go well for him there. Right. So once you start butting heads, I mean, both sides have a story to tell, I'm sure. The sunshine that I will pump, you said it, played with Aaron Donald in L.A., will be playing with Jeffrey Simmons in Tennessee. That's probably the best thing for him. That's when he played his best football. You're getting, you know, he didn't play with anyone of Jeffrey Simmons' caliber on the interior with the Chargers. So that's the best thing for him. It's a one-year deal, low cost. Obviously, he's trying to, you know, he's probably thinking, next to Jeffrey Simmons, I got a chance to have a great year, hit free agency again, cash in like Azeez Elshire just did, like Sean Murphy Bunting just did. Titans obviously are looking for those types that can be a one-year contributor. And hopefully that, you know, if that is his mentality and his mindset, then whatever plagued him in LA, if there was an effort issue or an entitlement issue, won't be present here in Tennessee. Because he's, at this point, let's be honest, he's playing for the future of his NFL career. You're no longer on a, you know, a multi-year, you know, $8 million a year contract, right? You're essentially trying to stick in the league. So hopefully, I think, you know, maturity and motivation will be present.
Yeah, and he's 28 years old. So like you said, this could be one of his last chances to really reprove himself. We're expecting it to be a prove it deal. That's what they call it, so that he can prove himself and sign one more big contract before he's just on a bunch of, you know, 1 year end of his career type of deals. So a solid option for the Titans there, defensive tackle. It doesn't totally fix the position. I think if you're talking about remaining needs, defensive tackle is still on the list, especially on the defensive side of the ball, but it's behind linebacker, safety, cornerback, defensive tackle. And I don't know how you stack up those three position group, those needs, you know, cornerback, linebacker, safety, but those three definitely outweigh defensive tackle after this signing. I don't think it takes them out of the running from taking a defensive tackle in the draft. I think, you know, when we do this next part here, when we talk about updated team needs, we're going to talk about maybe how the draft plans have changed a little bit from being surefire offensive tackle wide receiver in the first two rounds. I no longer think that's the case, but the Titans will probably still be adding on defense. Like they know as well as we do what the holes still are and where they have quality players and where they don't. And the fact that they're still out there signing guys like Sebastian Joseph Day is really good. Now, we mentioned earlier, they missed out on DJ Reader. They've also missed out on a couple other players that I think could have really helped them. One of them being Jerome Baker, the linebacker, who did reportedly, we never got confirmation that he came to Nashville, but there was a report that he was visiting Nashville last Thursday. He left without a contract. He went to Seattle. He visited Seattle as well, and he didn't leave Seattle without a contract. Seattle signed him to a 1-year, $7 million deal. Now, Did the Titans offer something similar? And he chose Seattle. He chose to play with Mike McDonald, who just, you know, made career years out of Patrick Queen and Roquan Smith. I don't know if that's the case. Jerome Baker has a lot of medical issues in his history. He's dealt with a lot of injuries even last season. The reason the Titans would have brought him in for a visit would be supposedly to check those medicals. There is a chance the Titans saw something and were like, look, it's not worth the risk. This guy could get re-injured very easily. He has this problem. He has this, whatever it is. So again, similar to DJ Reader, I don't want to lambast the Titans for not signing Jerome Baker to this contract, especially if they felt like there was too much risk there. Just because they have all this cap space to spend and there are players in free agency doesn't mean they have to blow it all this season, this offseason, on signing bodies just for the sake of signing bodies. So did the Titans want Jerome Baker? We'll never know, but he chose to sign with Seattle. Whether that was because of a medical issue the Titans didn't offer or if he just thought Seattle was a better fit for him, we'll never know. But that was a player that would have helped the defense, assuming he can stay healthy. And it's something I'll be tracking this season just for my own peace of mind is, will Jerome Baker be healthy and play 17 games in Seattle? I kind of doubt it.
Well, this one's a little different than DJ Reader. And I like when you and I disagree. We don't do it enough on this show because, you know, presumably he did visit Tennessee, right? We don't have legit reason to believe that that visit didn't happen. Yeah. So assuming he did visit and then went to Seattle, that makes it very different. They need a guy like him that could wear the green dot and call the defense. Still don't know who's going to be doing that. He's a candidate to do it. They don't have someone that can. Look, my best guess here, and I don't have a source on this, one of two reasons they didn't sign him, okay? They thought the money was too much, okay? I don't really buy that he wanted Mike McDonald, what you said. It probably came down to one or two things. They didn't agree on money. That's usually the first reason, right, that things don't work out in free agency when you talk to a guy. Or number two, like you said, the medicals didn't check out, right? Now, what I like about this, and you said it at the end, I was going to say it about tracking, is one of these teams is going to be right and one of them is going to be wrong. Because if it was a medical thing, Seattle clearly had no problem with his medicals. 1 year up to $7 million, they checked green check mark for them in the medical department. Yeah. I don't know if it was an X for the Titans, but it wasn't a problem for Seattle. Or Titans thought it was too much money, and we'll be able to make a decision there too, right, based on how he performs for Seattle in 2024. Sure. So one of these teams is going to be right about this guy. One of them is going to be wrong. When you're taking visits in free agency, in all honesty, it probably didn't go the way you wanted it to throughout the first week. Typically, right? You'd like to get a great lucrative offer and sign it over the phone, right? Like Calvin really did when he earned $50 million guaranteed.
Yeah.
Right? That's ideal. So I think if the Titans would have made him a good offer, he probably would have signed, right? And they probably would have, and he would have known the need that they had at the position. You're guaranteeing him the starting spot. He probably doesn't leave Tennessee if they make him a good offer, right? So who knows, but I'm skeptical about why they let him get out of the building. And I will be tracking how he does in 2024 for Seattle.
Yeah, another guy we'll be tracking because the Titans missed out on signing him is Chase Young, who reportedly had a visit lined up with the Titans, but visited the Panthers first. Then he had a visit scheduled with the Saints, had to reschedule that to Monday yesterday, and the Titans visit was also supposed to be reportedly yesterday, but I assume that would have been rescheduled when he went to New Orleans yesterday. Anyway, he doesn't leave New Orleans without a deal. Signs a 1 year, $13 million fully guaranteed contract. Now, there are prove-it deals, and there are prove it for 1 year, but you're still making bank deals. Now, obviously, this isn't up there with the $25 million, $28 million contracts that elite edge rushers are getting, which Chase Young probably envisioned him signing by this point in his own career after the rookie season he had. But still, doesn't make it out of New Orleans, never comes to visit the Titans. Titans never get a chance to sign him. 1 year, $13 million full and guaranteed, though. I'm not sure the Titans would have matched an offer like that had they had a chance to meet with him.
Well, it's funny. I think the last time we talked about him, and I just remember this, I predicted that he wouldn't make it to Tennessee, that one of Carolina or New Orleans wouldn't let him get out of the building, and I was right about it. I mean, New Orleans, that's a strong offer. That's a strong deal from New Orleans. What I'm curious to see, and I checked SpotRack before we got on here, they don't have it yet. Does that mean it's a $13 million cap hit for the Saints in 2024? I doubt it, because A, they struggle with the cap every year, and they're notorious for adding void years to the back end of the deal to lower the immediate cap hit. It always comes back and kind of bites them in the butt a little bit, right? They end up having to do all these, circus-like maneuvers to get cap compliant when the new year starts. Mike Herndon, our pal, felt really strongly about this one on Twitter, that the Titans would have absolutely done something similar.
I agree.
24-year-old Yeah, you agreed with him, you said, right? 24-year-old edge rusher that still has premium high-end ability. He was a second overall pick for a reason. The rookie year you mentioned, torn ACL, derailed multiple years. We don't know what he's going to be from this on point out. We don't know if motivation is going to be present after signing such a big. I mean, you think he'd be motivated to get another deal next year, right? Like $13 million is not enough for the rest of his life, most likely, you know, the way most of these guys live. So he'll be motivated to get another deal, you think. So motivation shouldn't be a problem. And I get where Mike is coming from. Like, you're right. Not a lot of opportunities to add a guy with this kind of talent at that age, right? It's still 24. It's crazy. That's what happens when you're really good and come out really young, right? You don't enter the draft at 23, 24, like some guys have to. I'm more in the middle on this one. And I'll tell you why. I do think the money was a bit much, a little bit much. I didn't expect he'd get, you know, fully guaranteed $13 million.
Me neither.
I'm not totally against it, but I'm in the middle. Number two is I don't see him as a great, like, three down player, right? I don't see him as that replacement for D'Nicole Autry, right?
Yeah.
I think I see him as right until he proves he can get back to that level where, that he was once at. I don't know that he's got the mileage for, to be a three down player, right? Based on how seriously that injury affected him at one point. It was more serious than most ACLs, right? Like, it derailed like two and a half complete seasons for him, essentially. So I've got questions about the mileage. I don't think he's a like-for-like replacement for D'Nicole Autry. Not that he would have had to be, but I think that's the type of edge they should be looking for, and that's why I don't love, you know, what we had said earlier in the show. Well, they got Arden Key, and I don't think Arden Key's that player either. So that's why I'm concerned about edge. But I'm in the middle. I wouldn't have hated it because you're excited about the upside that's still there. Maybe he has a great year. Maybe you franchise tag him, you sign him to a multi-year extension, and all of a sudden you've sort of backed your way into another premium player on this roster, which they don't have many of, and they need those types. So
yeah.
I get the appeal to why maybe they could have done something like this. But I still had some lingering questions that I wasn't fully, you know, comfortable with.
Yeah. And I think that that's ultimately the bottom line, is that, like, it wouldn't have mattered, because same thing with DJ Reader. Like, we can talk night and day about how the Titans should have done this, should have done that. Chase Young wanted to be in New Orleans. He reportedly wanted to play next to Cam Jordan. They offered him a contract that he liked, and he signed it. The Titans had no chance. So it is what it is. I mean, there's other edge players out there, and again, we'll talk about that here in our next episode. But yeah, that it's just a bummer, because like you said, it would have been amazing to add a player with that kind of talent. I mean, motivation questions, sure, but that kind of talent you can't just add in free agency on a cheap one-year deal. And this wasn't necessarily a cheap one-year deal, but I mean, the kind of player you have to draft in the top five to get talent-wise would have been nice for the, would have been a bonus there for the Titans to try to add someone like that. But anyway, that will do it for this episode. Titans signed Sebastian Joseph Day, but still plenty of needs. And we're going to talk about what those needs are here on our next episode coming out in a bit. Titans' biggest remaining needs and how the draft may be altered by the Titans' free agency so far. So let's get into that, Justin, next. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Thank you for watching on YouTube. Please make sure you are subscribed to the channel, the Music City Audible podcast. Drop a comment below. What do you think of Sebastian Joseph Day? Thumbs up, thumbs down. Let us know in the comments. More comments we get, the more this video gets put in front of other people's eyeballs, the more we grow. And hey, send the link to a friend. You like this video? You know a Titans fan? Send them the link to this video and remind them that this episode is brought to you by Sinker's Beverages in East Nashville and Bluegrass Beverages in Hendersonville. And hey, be sure to sign up for the in crowd there with Sinker's Beverages. Get exclusive offers, access to a lot, and that's the only way you can get notified of the 440 draft party that will be announced later month or early next month for the annual draft party that they do with for Sinker's Beverages. So the link to sign up to the in crowd is below in the description. Check that out and make sure you head over to Sinker's Beverages in East Nashville and Bluegrass Beverages in Hendersonville. So all right, that'll do it, Justin. That'll do it, everyone. Thanks for tuning in again. We'll be back later. Until then, y'all stay safe out there and tighten up.
A Broadway Sports Media production.